Hello and welcome to Blockchain Gaming World episode 161. I'm your host, John Jordan. Don't forget to check out my daily email about blockchain gaming. You can find that at gamestx.substack.com. In today's episode, I'm talking to Jacob C., who is the founder at Hyperplay. Hyperplay is a distribution platform for blockchain games, PC games, and also it does some acceleration of browser-based games. So we are talking really about what's going on when it comes to the distribution of PC games with blockchain elements. Hyperplay is interesting in the sense that it comes from Consensus. So Jacob worked at Consensus on MetaMask, and it has a very deep integration of MetaMask within the Hyperplay sort of a system, the ecosystem. So that's giving you a native experience of blockchain games using MetaMask. It also has a few interesting features. It allows you to log into Epic Game Store or GOG, and so you can access though your game libraries from those platforms as well within the sort of Hyperplay as a sort of a sort of interface. You could look at it that way. So we're really talking about the distribution of blockchain games and some of the challenges. Also try and talk about what are the main features of distribution platforms, which is not necessarily just about distributing games. And there's some other interesting things in there as well. So I hope you enjoy the show. Don't forget to subscribe. Every week we are putting out new podcasts. I've got April pretty much booked up already, so there's some really good ones for that. So it's going well from that point of view. Don't miss out. Do subscribe, and see you next week. So welcome to the show. Very pleased that I have Jacob from Hyperplay on today's episode. How's it going, Jacob?
Thank you so much for having me, John. I'm very delighted to be here.
Good. So today we are talking all things specifically Hyperplay, and generally I'd like to talk a bit about distribution of blockchain games as well. But before we get onto those good things, let's find out a bit more about Jacob. So could you give us a bit of a history into how you got into blockchain and ended up at Hyperplay?
Yeah, a many faceted journey, like many people. So I was an old school Bitcoiner. I got into it in the very, very early days, more as an ideological thing and a protest against the financial crisis of the time. But at the time, it was really something I was sort of just fascinated with and a weird hobby on the side. In 2015 and 2016, I saw some of the early Ethereum white paper and early dApps being built at like the DAO, which didn't turn out so well, but the idea of building decentralized applications to me was something that was really similar to the early internet that I grew up with. Like I grew up with BitTorrent, and I was in like the scene of like modifying and creating homebrew for Xboxes, and like the internet was supposed to be weird. It was supposed to be this place for like weirdo hackers like me. And then I realized that, we were getting an internet that was just five companies that run our lives. And, I wanted an internet that was more decentralized and empowering, and that had, more ethical business models. And so I just became obsessed with Ethereum. I joined Consensus in 2018, and then I had a Web2 real estate company that I was a part of, and did an acquisition by Berkshire Hathaway in 2017, and then as quickly as I could came and joined the Consensus and Ethereum, early Consensus and Ethereum ecosystem. I worked on some early grant funding DAOs, and then I served as lead of operations for MetaMask, which is the largest wallet and main way that people interact with decentralized applications. I wanted to improve the user experience around Web3 and do so in a way that really leveraged the value propositions of Web3 itself. And so I was in the MetaMask team for about 3 years. I had come to see that half or more of MetaMask's massive user base was people who have gaming, like games in their Web3 reputation. And yet the Web3 user experience for people playing video games, it's really sucky. And I had seen though that like a lot of these users, they were starting with games and they were coming from really diverse countries around the world, but commonly countries that are locked out of the legacy financial system. And so they were coming and playing video games, earning tokens and getting, you know, early amounts of ownership in the protocols that they participate in. And then they were taking that and going into decentralized finance, and they were getting access to this entire world of other decentralized protocols, and leapfrogging the traditional financial system and becoming owners of the financial system themselves. And that to me was a really profound moment to realize that. And so I had thought a bit about building a gaming product inside of Consensus, and I pitched it to people, but it was a little bit outside of the wheelhouse of what Consensus has done historically. And so instead we built Hyperplay in deep partnership with MetaMask, and they are MetaMask and Consensus are owners in Hyperplay.
Okay.
But we went and built this Web3 game store and a new distribution platform for games that's focused on solving the user experience problems around gaming for Web3. Okay. And my view is also that a lot of those problems stem from the legacy Web2 platforms, because like the reality is game developers are spending more time trying to comply with bizarro policies from these monopoly stores than they are building great games.
Okay.
And we can get into that more later, but you know, I felt like Web3 native experiences need Web3 native distribution. And so we set out to build things in a really different way. Our app is it's an aggregator of multiple game stores. So we have our store, which is the Epic Game Store. We have we have our store, which is the Hyperplay Store. We also aggregate the Epic Game Store. And we aggregate GOG, and we have some other major gaming stores coming soon.
Okay.
And so the entire library of all of those game stores you can play inside of Hyperplay, we pass your wallet into the game using an overlay, which is really similar to how Steam will overlay chat windows or notifications, achievements on top of games. And we do that as well. But the thing we do is we allow the user to take their wallet, their reputation, their assets into all these games and interoperably carry that wallet between every game that the player plays, and to transact permissionlessly for the game developer to be able to build their game in a way that that is the way they want to build it, and to still have access to great distribution. And by giving them multiple game distribution channels, we're creating a scenario where the game developer can choose one, two, many different game distribution channels without a fear of being deplatformed by one, this or that channel. So we're creating a competitive market that moves the economics of gaming away from these monopolistic platforms like Steam, Apple, Google Play, and instead moves the power to the game developer and the player, and creates business models where those two communities are aligned.
Cool. So plenty to unpick there. Always good to see old school Bitcoiners adopting Ethereum, which we know that they didn't quite all haven't quite made the jump yet. But good you and just maybe to clarify, I mean, you sort of pointed out, you know, Consensus was very much a I mean, you would know more than me clearly, but Consensus is very much a Ethereum sort of focused organization that did sort of a lot of early research into sort of building infrastructure around sort of Ethereum and sort of deep infrastructure. And obviously, I guess MetaMask is probably one of the more consumer focused sort of things that came out of Consensus. And I guess we'll talk a little bit that MetaMask is a very sort of key element of what you're doing at Hyperplay. One thing you didn't sort of mention, and I'd like to sort of pick out a little bit, is you know, personally, were you very much a gamer, or was sort of just, you know, everyone's sort of a gamer now? So can maybe... Can you
talk? So I am a lifelong gamer.
Okay.
Yeah. I can also, so I'm mainly a JRPG gamer.
Yeah.
I play probably an unhealthy amount of JRPGs. I did grow up playing, like, I would say, like, the two games that were really formative on me, more commonly known, Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
But the other one that really profoundly impacted me as a kid was a game called Suikoden 2.
Oh, yeah.
The Suikoden games were, like, for anyone that doesn't know, these are, like, Game of Thrones mixed with Pokemon, mixed with, like, Risk and chess. And so it has, like, the adventuring of Final Fantasy VII and the party battles. But it has, like, 108 recruitable characters per game. And they did these things where your game reputation in one game was portable to the next game. They would read the save file from the previous game. And your decisions would persist across the five different games that were in the mainline series. And that you would unlock additional content for having historical save files. And it just had this richness of game worlds. And the game both in a lot of ways mirrors what's possible with Web3 in an early way. And so I think that probably gave me some inspiration around imagining what Web3 games could be. But also the game was profound, like, in its story and its impact on me as a person. Like, it makes you want to be a hero and to do good for humanity. And it depicts the grayness of the world we live in, where everything isn't binary. Like, there's really difficult decisions that we make, and things that we do for the people that we love. And it was really deep in it. 12-year-old me came out of playing that game wanting to change the world. And
No, I think, I mean, not playing that one, but I think it was definitely a sweet spot for the sort of, for those sort of Japanese RPGs, where the very early Final Fantasies that I played were sort of a little bit sort of not quite developed enough, but then Seven clearly was one where the graphics didn't overwhelm it. So the graphics was, you know, you had to sort of create it in your own mind, because it's just blocky little graphics. But the story was really, it was, yeah, it taken a step forward, and maybe it wasn't quite War and Peace, but there was definitely deeper philosophical things going on there in that sort of era. So cool, good. So when you're sort of sitting there thinking about doing something sort of gaming, yeah, lots of things you could do in gaming with sort of infrastructure hat on. Why was sort of games distribution something that ended up being, you know, what you wanted to base a new company around? Because, you know, I mean, it hadn't happened at the time, but clearly sort of, you know, now we have sort of Epic Game Store, which is at least allowing blockchain games. And there's sort of quite a lot of, they're not really distribution platforms, but there's quite a lot of discovery sort of platforms, quite a lot of guilds turned into sort of, you know, if you want to play blockchain games, we'll sort of, you know, point you in the right direction. So to me, sort of on the outside looking in, it didn't seem like a sort of primary sort of need for the industry, but clearly you think it is because you've set up a company doing it. So can you sort of talk us through some of that thinking?
Yeah, so I mean, there's a few challenges with the legacy platform. So if we start from the main monopolistic players that people would normally think of, like Steam, Apple, Google, you know, they make, I mean, actually, my understanding is at this point, Apple's, the majority of their revenue actually comes from Apple App Store transactions. And those transactions, they have to route through their Web2 payment rails. They don't have a way to take a portion of a smart contract interaction. Mm-hmm. And so the logical conclusion of Web3 is these permissionless smart contract interactions where the player can take their wallet, they can interact with a smart contract. The rules of the payment and the rules of what's going to happen in that interaction are defined in the smart contract. And there is not a technical way for those legacy Web2 platforms to extract fees. And so you have some examples where, you know, people like Google are, they're trying to say, like, well, it's allowed in Google Play as long as you have the user pay using fiat, and then you basically overcharge the user 30% above what the transaction is, and you're bundling this huge additional fee and passing it on to the consumer. And then afterwards, after you buy that asset, is the user allowed to continue transacting with that asset and do things in Web3? Like, it's the most very bare minimum cynical version of what's possible in Web3. And people fought a war to get Google to that point. And Google still views it with a tremendous amount of cynicism. And so, you know, I think that the level of disruption that Web3 represents for these distribution platforms has been underestimated. And then even those platforms like Google or others that are that allow Web3 content, they do view that Web3 content as like their redheaded stepchildren. You know, I don't want to, you know, name specific names, but like we're aware of like, you know, specific apps get algorithmically demoted. Those apps are don't have access to the same kinds of like being featured or promoted inside of the platforms. And they're still confined by the store policies of the platforms that they're in, which dramatically reduce the amount of Web3 composability that's allowed in these games.
Yeah.
And so when you look at that, and then you look at the need to carry, like, there's what's really bad about the Web2 platforms, but then there's also like, there's a whole range of tooling and things that game developers need from their distribution platform to be in a Web3 native way and to build in the best possible way that we can provide. So we can make it where the user can connect their wallet to our store. They can connect MetaMask to our store, and then we persist that connection to all of the games that you launch within our store. And then we do things like, we do things like we're going to have a pretty interesting launch around quests and achievements and incentives and creating a layer for that across all of the games. That's coming very soon. There's also just a lot of game developers. They know how to build games, but they don't know how to deal with the Web3 side. And so like our developer portal and tooling helps to demystify some of the process of building games and help people deploy common smart contracts or all of those kinds of things. We want to be a real partner for them in the way that many of these Web2 platforms were in the Web2 era, but now have taken an antagonistic relationship with the game developers. I think that we also, because our incentives are a little bit different, we can also do the Web2 portion better. Okay. So for example, in Hyperplay, it's possible to play Windows games on Mac OS, Steam Deck, or Linux. And Valve is very famous for creating the ability to play Windows games better on Linux and Steam Deck. And they do that because they have their own version of Linux that is focused on gaming, and then they have their own game console, the Steam Deck. But they won't do the same for Mac OS because that's not their platform. And so we've stepped into bringing together a number of different open source libraries to make the best app because our incentives are different. We just want to create permissionless gaming. And so the vast majority of Windows games, including Windows games on Epic or even on Steam, can actually be played on Mac through Hyperplay. And so we're creating a better user experience and a better app and platform for the gamers. And we're able to break out of some of the silos and inertia that these legacy platforms have.
Mm-hmm. So I guess one thing we should point out that Hyperplay is a desktop sort of launcher. So access the game through that is you download something onto your desktop, and then you can log in, as you say, you can log in to Epic Game Store within Hyperplay, and then you get access to your library there. Obviously, can't do that with Steam, I guess.
we would love to enter the mobile space as well. I won't say anything further about that.
So, I mean, I guess I should point out sort of Hyperplay's been around for not quite a year yet, so you still are still sort of, I guess, fairly early in your journey of trying to work out what sort of pieces and how they all fit together. But I guess one of the sort of issues that not just nothing to do with Web3 really is, but one of the sort of general issues people are having, certainly with Steam, is that it's very hard to get people, certainly for sort of PC game players, they have their entire library in Steam. So unless Steam becomes entirely broken, they just basically, when they think about playing PC games, that's sort of where they go. That's where their sort of whole history is. And so it's not necessarily to do with the distribution per se of a sort of, you know, an executable. It's more to do with the sort of the platform and how people's psychology works, and, you know, obviously there's sort of social layers in there as well, and wish lists and all that sort of, you know. So it's not just distribution. Yeah. It's the whole panoply of that. And obviously Steam's been whatever 20 years. You're not going to sort of compete with that in a year. But what's your thinking around, you know, those sort of things that could be seen as sort of secondary, but really very quickly become sort of the primary reasons why people would go to a place, an app, in order to access their games?
Well, reputation is a really powerful moat in the Web2 world. Yeah. You build up this reputation, you don't own it, the platform owns it. Mm-hmm. And they use that reputation to trap you. Mm-hmm. and to extract more and more value through you, through these 30% transaction fees. You know, when I used to work in Web2 real estate, for example, everything to do with the Web2 mindset was own the whole platform, extract as much value, mm-hmm. lock people into this platform. And that's how they think. And that's what you're trained to think. And if you don't think that as a product manager, then you've lost your mind. Web3 is different. We want to connect to a lot of the user's historical reputation, and we want to bring that on chain. We want it to be owned by the user. We want it to be portable, including outside of our own platform, and for the user to be able to use that reputation in a really permissionless way across the whole decentralized web. We want your assets to live in your wallet, and you can use that wallet inside of Hyperplay, but you can take that wallet to Chrome, and you can go to OpenSea, or you can go to, you know, any of the huge, you know, diversity of hundreds of thousands of decentralized applications, and use those same assets that originated from games you played in Hyperplay across them. We also are really excited about games that share assets. So we have, for example, we have multiple games which are all part of the Avagachi universe that build on the same contracts by different independent game developers. If anyone's not familiar with the Avagachi experience, like it's incredible. Like, they started with a very simple dApp where you had a pet, ghost, and you fed it and you raised it and you loved it. But it was a simple game, and it had some connections to Aave and DeFi. And then now they've moved to this world where they have, you know, about a dozen different games from different game studios that are all sharing the same contracts that share state and assets between them. And their games are different genres, like Fortnite style battle royales. They've got, which is Spirit Force Arena. They've got, like a Vampire Survivors clone. Which is dropped. They've got a tower defense games, and it's just, they're building this rich universe of many, many different interoperable games and trying to build in a really Web3 native way. And I think that's the future of, like, back before Facebook tried to make metaverse mean VR, like metaverse meant a decentralized universe of your assets and the state being shared across games and game worlds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people have lost that definition now, but that's the vision that we want to build and that we're going to fulfill.
Mm-hmm. So when you talk about things like reputation, to me that seems less like sort of distribution of games is the primary thing of what you're trying to do. That's the means to the end, and reputation is much more, okay, maybe that's 10 years down the line, but that's much more the thing that you think, as you said, it's a powerful moat. So would that be a correct characterization of your thinking, or would you?
Well, reputation in Web3 is a much bigger deal than it is in Web2. Yeah. It's already a big deal in Web2 because you earn these achievements. They're, you know, your last 20 years of gaming, and you don't want to start over. But also like Steam has, you know, the Steam cards, and they're like a centralized version of NFTs that they can deplatform you at any time and that don't carry a lot of value because they're not really owned by you. And that's basically what it is. And it sits inside of a walled garden. It's kind of interesting, but kind of not. And it's a way to entrap you in the platform so that they can extract more value. In Web3, reputation is many things. It's the assets that you own. It's your historical reputation of games that you've played, achievements you've unlocked. It's, you know, we're seeing more and more, like one of our partners is called Summon. They're another product that was incubated inside of a DAO called Game7, which is also where Hyperplay was incubated. And that platform specializes in gamified participation and doing things like reputation-based governance. So like we know, like a lot of the old school Web3 protocols, they did one token, one vote. And so this meant, you know, plutocracy. who owns the most tokens decides everything, including in many instances against the interests of the app itself. Like you see like certain short-term minded VCs, you know, doing things to sabotage the apps and protocols that they funded so that they can get exit value out of those, you know, short-term exit value out of those protocols and not being long-term aligned with the protocol that they're a part of. And so, you know, I think it's really, really important that instead, you know, what Summon does is allow the user based on reputation, contributions, whether are they making open source developer contributions, are they participating and playing, and are they a real user? And then giving multipliers on token votes based on your reputation. Mm-hmm. And we'll have things like that are coming to Hyperplay as well as a part of this, where those who contribute the most, those who participate the most, are the ones who should be governing these platforms, not the financial speculators.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to sort of games, I sort of wonder whether, I mean, I think we've seen this just in the Web2 space, where sort of we end up with sort of winner takes all scenarios where, yeah, over time we've seen sort of the bigger games tend to get bigger and there's some interesting indie stuff, but the sort of middle, what was 10 years ago quite a big sort of range of middle ranking sort of games sort of becomes quite hard to do. And thinking of sort of blockchain games as maybe primarily economies, my sort of view is over time they sort of become quite massive and it becomes quite hard to be in the middle. I think there's quite a lot of interesting niche, profitable niche stuff that you couldn't have done before that you can do with blockchain. But that makes me sort of wonder with the distribution or even stuff like, you know, wide ecosystem reputation matters so much. Cause this is just like a couple of massive games and everyone's playing in those because they're the biggest economies and they have the most money to develop the most fun and blah, blah, blah. That maybe a lot of this other stuff around the side just sort of falls away because we just have these sort of almost like monolithic sort of economies that live there. And it seems to me that a lot of distribution is based around sort of long tail stuff, which then doesn't really sort of matter. So, I mean, you got any sort of thoughts on how that sort of stuff plays out?
Well, the incentives in Web3 are different.
You think?
Like, we haven't seen the same consolidation of monopolies in Web3 that we saw in Web2. In each category, there's been very large players. And over time, the incentivization of blockchains and tokens has decentralized power and ownership to the users of those platforms and protocols over time, not the consolidation of them. And so, you know, we had Uniswap as the sole major DEX that had product market fit. Today, we have so many decentralized exchanges that have sprung up. That service use different use cases. Games have their own decentralized exchanges built into them. Like if you ever tried in DeFi Kingdoms, they have their own fork of Uniswap that's built into that game.
But Uniswap's still by far and away the biggest volume. Would that be right?
That's definitely true. Yeah. That's definitely true. But But I think the pattern we see is that the pattern we see is that like in Web 2, a very, very increasingly small number of people get immensely rich and monopolize everything. And the way that the incentives work in Web 3 is that as soon as you start doing something that is against the interests of your users, someone else can take the on-chain reputation, find your users and use tokens to attract users to a different protocol and platform and incentivize that. And so we've seen a lot of people making money, but the balance of ownership and power is much more decentralized in Web3 than it is in Web2. Obviously there are exceptions and there are things that happen which are egregious and indefensible. The arc of where this is going tends to be towards the internet itself. Like I believe Web3 is it's the economic system of the internet being manifest. It's, we had the early internet was the ideas. It was the information layer of the internet, but now we have, the native economy of the internet, and that is manifesting itself in a lot of different really powerful and interesting ways. And, it creates completely new types of business models and completely new types of incentives and new types of ownership.
Cool. So you said sort of fairly early stages in the first year, but I don't know how much sort of feedback you sort of had at the moment. I just had a quick look at your Twitter, and I noticed a few games that I'm playing. You're partnering up with so Cosmic Battle, Pirate Nations, Mighty Action Heroes. So you've got some good quality sort of games on there. I guess distribution platforms have no problem sort of getting people to distribute through them. But how are you finding it? Because I guess you're sort of like the typical sort of two-sided market, aren't you? So you have to get developers sort of interested in sort of working with you, and because you want all the sort of community stuff, and equally, if you don't, you need players to actually, or users. Yeah. So, and you need both of them at the same time, which is quite hard to organize. So, how are you finding that process?
So I'd say, it's by the way, just in terms of games. So, it's no secret. I'm a avid Pirate Nation player, and
oh yeah, okay, cool.
With it. But I think that game is so awesome. It's a brilliant usage of it's a fully on-chain game that doesn't feel like a fully on-chain game. It proves so much as possible. The gameplay is really fun. It brings together like great gameplay and gamification, interesting usage of the Web3 assets, a really well implemented account abstraction flow. They have like really great infrastructure as a, they have their own L3 that helps them reduce gas costs and abstract away the gas fees from the user. It's fantastic. I also love Shrapnel, by the way. That's my other obsession right now. But which is an extraction shooter for anyone that doesn't know, high stakes FPS. It's like the next generation of FPS.
Do you just find it? I just get shot all the time. I find it a very disheartening experience. I turn up, I wander around for a bit, and then I get shot from someone I haven't seen, and then I go.
is that because you like you suck?
Because I suck, yeah. Exactly that. But it's still very disheartening.
Yeah, I mean, I think that like I really like what games like Society are doing, or there's another game that's part of our platform, Bushi, where they have similar types of extraction mechanisms coming, but there's also like PvE things where you're competing with a group. It's maybe a little bit, for those of us who aren't the most extreme hardcore gamers and don't want to get shot and lose their items all the time. They're a little bit more forgiving, but you are also like, it's also high stakes. Like you go on a quest to fight a giant monster together as a group, and it's just like madness and mayhem. And then it has competitive things as well. But anyway, to go back to your question about Sorry, restate. You said.
So I guess the cold start problem where you have a platform where you need games and users both at the same time, please.
Yeah. So we are a multi-sided platform. It really matters that we attract the game developer, and that the way we think about it is we do everything we can to serve the game developer, to solve their hardest problems, and to provide them the best game distribution channel. They refer their users to our store to come and play their game inside of our store. And the more users we get from each game, the more users there are for the other games. And so that creates a compounding value. And then those users help attract more game developers. We serve those game developers and keep expanding our offerings to the game developers who send us more users and so on. Mm-hmm. It's very similar to the flywheel of MetaMask. And I did a lot of work on the business model of MetaMask, and I worked on the swaps product and how it was monetized. I worked on the growth model and the relationship between the developer and the user. Mm-hmm. So that same kind of business model is at the heart of Hyperplay, and you know, I've seen it work, and I know that it works, and we're seeing it work for Hyperplay too. We're having pretty fantastic growth right now, so it's been really, really wonderful.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's probably a year ago, it was quite hard to attract people. I guess it's interesting now that every blockchain game is announcing a token and having some sort of point system, and everyone's farming throughout, and there's just a lot of people just trying out new stuff. There's lots of openness, and there's a lot of games out there. So I guess it's taking
new... when we first started, we thought we would launch with 5 games.
Okay.
We ended up having 21 games on launch day. Mm-hmm. But I will say, like, on that launch day lineup, you know, 90% plus were early access games, like, honestly, like games that had less than an hour of playable content.
Yeah.
And that was the state of where Web3 gaming was 1 year ago. There was a handful of other games that, you know, that had richer content, but their gameplay was pretty sucky. And they were mainly like, the content was all just based on like farming some token. And today, like, you go and play games like Shrapnel or Pirate Nation, and like, those are really rich games. There's a lot coming to them, and they're also building not just they're building a great deal of extensibility. Like, you know, Decentraland used to be like a really simple game where you walked around and chatted with people, and now there's like multiple casinos, there's first person shooters in Decentraland, there's people have got their own vending machines and built third party businesses that are on top of the game. And I see the same expansion of these game universes happening across the board. The content is getting so much better, and the better that the content gets, the easier it becomes for us to get users.
Mm-hmm. Coming to the end, sort of wrapping up, I wonder sort of what you can tell us about as much as you can tell us at the moment, I suppose, about sort of plans for the rest of the year and what stuff we should be looking out for.
We have many, many launches that are coming up. Actually, so many launches that our PR company told us we need to launch them slower than we are technically capable so that people can digest each of them. we're going to announce a new investment from a major player in the ecosystem. Depending on the air date of this video, it may have already been announced. So we've got that coming. We're announcing a new store inside of Hyperplay. A new AAA mainstream gaming store is coming to Hyperplay as a fourth store, and we've got a fifth one in the pipe shortly after. We're doing some really cool stuff with achievements, quests, and reputation that you and I kind of hinted at on this call today. And then we have a number of major partnerships that we expect to be driving a lot of growth and users into the platform. I'm sorry, those are all each individually vague, but we'll have special announcements for each.
That's good. Cool selection. People can go and check out Hyperplay Gaming on Twitter, and obviously go and download the app. Excellent. And cool. Lovely. Thank you very much, Jacob, for your time.
Thank you so much, John. This is absolutely a pleasure.
Cool. And a thank you to you for watching, listening to the podcast, however you are consuming it. Every week we are talking to the people who are building out the various components of blockchain gaming, which is, you know, often games, but sometimes infrastructure and plenty of other sort of tech parts that come together to make the whole thing. So I hope you are subscribed. I hope you are enjoying it, and see you again next time.